Welcome to Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we watch the movies you recommend, and we don't know what we're going to watch till we sit down to do it. I am John. Over there is Jeff. We are your hosts. And tangentially related to what we watched this week, we've got a little bit of folklore for you.
Yeah, we were having a discussion prior to recording tonight that I really feel like bears some examination. I just want to read you a sentence from Wikipedia, John. Just a single sentence.
Just one single sentence from Wikipedia.
Little Bunny Fufu, or Little Rabbit Fufu, is a children's poem involving a rabbit harassing a population of field mice.
I love the idea that he's just harassing them.
He's just doing donuts in their lawns and stuff. I trained my dog to shit in your yard.
I mean, for me, I keep going like, man, why is everyone like, oh, that fucking rabbit? I'm like, all he's doing is picking up a field mice and going like, boop.
Yeah, that's because you've added an O for cutesy value, and also because you've never heard the whole song, apparently.
Well, no. I mean, who honestly knows the lyrics beyond Little Bunny Foo Foo hopping through the forest, picking up the field mice, bopping them on the head? Like, that's all anyone knows.
Yeah. It's the next one is Gold Deduction Never Fails. That's for certain. The Worst of Messes. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the second verse of the DuckTales theme song. My bad.
Yeah, the rest of the song is like a good fairy comes down and is like, hey, rabbit, could you cut the shit?
I mean, it's a really confusing song past that point. It's like down came the good fairy and the good fairy said, hey, little rabbit foo-foo, stop picking up field mice. So help me, if I see you pick up three more field mice.
If you got three chances, yeah. And if you blow it, I'm going to turn you into a goon.
A goon, as it turns out.
Yeah. Or a goonie, which I feel like that's not bad. Because, I mean, Goonies are good enough.
Yeah, that's definitely a good enough outcome. Now, Goon, it's interesting because the song is really old, but we don't know how old because it's a weird old fairy tale type song, like an old nursery rhyme. And the etymology of the word goon has changed so much over the years. Like, nowadays, it sounds like she's going to turn him into, like, a mafia thug.
Yeah, it's like, oh, if you... Oh, rabbit, if you don't quit bopping those field mice, I'm going to turn you into a giant dude.
Yeah, in an ill-fitting suit who breaks thumbs.
Yeah, that's I'm going to turn you into a muscly dude in, like, brown slacks, suspenders, and a wife beater.
Which is going to, the rabbit's just going to be like, sweet, I can bop way more field mice on the head now.
Oh, no way, he's never going to catch them now. Them field mice are definitely going to get away from a big old goon.
That's right, she's taking away his ability to do the one thing he loves.
Yeah, but now he's just going to have to get by with, like, bopping store owners for protection money. I need you to go bop the thumbs.
And I hope your first child is a masculine child. But if it's old enough, the song, then it's probably referring to a goose or an albatross.
Yeah, so if he's going to be turned into a goose, I'm still thinking, all right, but is there like a pecking order on how good of an animal you are? Like, if you get downgraded from rabbit to goose, are you going to be like, oh, I'm so sad?
Well, I think like goose, especially in terms of nursery rhymes, yeah, rabbit's higher up than goose.
But Mother Goose.
Yeah, but I don't even think she's actually a goose. I think she's just named Mother Goose.
I mean, it depends. Sometimes she's a literal goose, and sometimes she is Mother Goose and is just like, her last name is Goose.
Yeah, like the Ugly Duckling is the other one I always think. I mean, there's no geese in that, though. He thinks he's a duck, but it turns out he's a swan.
Yeah.
Swans aren't geese.
And geese have nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And it's good that you brought that up.
Yeah, because that's the next thing I wanted to discuss was that entire rhyme.
Yeah. So we watched Babes in Toyland, and this is only tangentially related because they go to a fantasy land here, and basically the dregs of what you could get. There's just sort of Mother Goose rhyme characters. Pretty much.
It's just some crap. I mean, to be clear, we watched the 1986 Babes in Toyland.
Now, on our big Christmas list, Babes in Toyland was on there, but it didn't give a year. Now, I assumed they wanted the 1961 Babes in Toyland, but that can go bite a fart. I'm watching the made-for-TV movie Babes in Toyland.
I'm willing to bet they meant this.
I don't know.
Because this is fucking nonsense, and that's most of what the... this is Shenanigans, which is the number one recordings that people request from us.
Yep. So, you know what? I'm going to play you a little ditty that will hopefully get you in the mood to listen to the rest of this podcast.
We can try and find that opening song from this movie.
Oh, I definitely am.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it here pre-spoilers, but
no.
Jesus.
Okay, yeah. So we are going to play a little bit of music, and we will be right back with a full review of 1986's Babes in Toyland.
Welcome to glorious Cincinnati, queen of Ohio's alpine ski resorts. I come from
C-I-N-C-I-N-N-A-T-I Cincinnati,
the best town in Ohio,
USA.
At first they called it Cincy, but since Cincy is so natty, they named it Cincinnati, so they say.
And we're back. Now, hopefully, what you just listened to was a little snippet of the song Cincinnati.
Yeah, now, honestly, if I were picking up field mice and bopping them on the head, being forced to live in Cincinnati would be a worthwhile threat the fairy could issue to me.
Oh, yeah. And be like, I'll turn you into a goose and be like, eh, whatever, I'll just bop them as a goose. Right, I'll make you a goose and you'll have to live in Cincinnati. All right, well, fuck.
I apologize. I am backing away now.
I will put this field mouse down and I will back away.
Oh, full apologies. But yeah, it's such a weird... I mean, I don't remember if that's part of the original Babes in Toyland story or not.
So the like IMDb page for this movie has very little trivia. Like, one of them is that the original runtime of this when it aired was about 2 hours, whereas what we watched was about 90 minutes, and the half hour that was cut was basically just other shitty songs.
I hope they were mostly also about Cincinnati.
Well, the other thing is the original Babes in Toyland was like an operetta.
Yes.
And they used none of it.
Yo,
the trivia of this was like, oh yeah, there was some lady who made up a bunch of songs for this, and they just scrapped most of the operetta's music.
I don't know. I mean, because the music is atrocious, even the stuff they left in.
Oh yeah. I mean, the songs that they left in are just bad.
They only left in the ones
and
that are
badly performed.
Yeah. I mean, the Cincinnati song ends up having plot relevance by the end of the film.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's the only reason it wasn't also cut.
I don't even know if that's a song that's originally in there, and if it is, great.
I can't imagine. It feels like it's some fight song from like a Cincinnati college football team in the 1920s or something.
Except it talks about like the Bengals and the whatever.
Yeah, I assume that replaced whatever the original Cincinnati football, like college football teams were. Like, they just took a little creative license and they took out whatever that had been originally, like the Escaped Slaves or something.
Wow.
Ohio is a terrible place, John. I always assume the worst.
Okay.
Except, you know, my apologies to anyone who is from Ohio that we are friends with and that we're like collaborating with in a couple of days.
Yeah, no, still no.
Oh, wait, aren't they in Wisconsin? Never mind, screw Ohio.
No, once again, fuck Ohio.
So
yeah, honestly, the other trivia thing on the IMDb page is just sad. It's just that Drew Barrymore was 11 when this was made, and that she was already hanging out at nightclubs, smoking cigarettes, and was about to start having alcohol and marijuana, and was apparently hanging out with Sting during the filming of this in Germany?
And Rod Stewart?
Weird,
it's just
right? Like, what?
Yeah. Weirdly, she's not even in the movie. That's just part of the trivia that they
trivia.
Listed. Yeah, at the time of this movie's making, Drew Barrymore was up to the following.
So this movie has a young Drew Barrymore, a very young Keanu Reeves.
Pre-Bill and Ted Keanu Reeves.
I don't remember the name for the main love interest in this, but she was in The Stepfather, which I reviewed for Horrortoberfest this year.
Yeah.
And
Marg Helgenberger.
Yeah, that's it.
Berg Helgenmarger.
Ah, there we go. Yeah. Finally.
I got it
in two.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So, and she's basically in a bunch of other, like, horror movies.
Okay.
So, pretty much this and horror movies is all that she's done.
All right. Good for her.
And then
stay
we got,
busy.
Fucking Pat Morita.
Yeah, Pat
Morita's in this.
And Richard Mulligan, who I vaguely recognized.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a TV movie from 1986, specifically. This was aired like... This is like watching the Disney... holiday special for Star Wars. Except this actually got a VHS release and is simply being denied a DVD and Blu-ray release.
Yes. Yeah. As well it should.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Now, the VHS release, I think, from, again, the IMDb, was only in Germany, which is weird.
Yeah,
but it was filmed there, and I guess, you know, Germans aren't as discerning.
Germans aren't a discerning people.
Yeah, they'll take what they can get.
Yeah.
That's what's known about Germans. Germans are basically just easygoing.
Sloppy and inexact.
Yep, that's the German for you.
Mm-hmm. That's why their watches are so terrible.
Oh, yeah, that's why you got to go to the Swiss.
Yeah, the Swiss make good watches. And
Swiss.
Chocolate.
Ooh.
And cheese.
Yeah, whereas German chocolate, garbage.
Yeah.
German cheese,
terrible.
Yeah. Oh, ugh, don't even get me started. Okay, so this movie opens in the modern 1986 day, and it's the two daughters, what's-her-face and who gives a shitsy, and the two of them are hanging around their house on Christmas Eve.
Yep, so...
By the way, this episode might as well be called the System Mastery Tangentially Christmas Spectacular, because this movie only vaguely intersects with Christmas at a random point.
Well, it is Christmas Eve at the household of Julie and her sister. Julie is Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, Julie and Drews.
Yeah, Julie and Drews.
Yeah.
Now, Drews is here, and she thinks... So
that's just short for Drusilla. It's Julie and Drusilla.
Yeah, Julie and Drusilla from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, that Drusilla.
Here,
yes,
that Drusilla.
Uh huh.
Back in time.
Yeah.
So they the older sister is going to go to work. She works at some store,
yeah.
Some toy store.
The Five and Dime, they call it. They consistently refer to it as the Five and Dime. I assume it actually is one.
I don't know. It's a toy store.
It might be a toy store. Sure.
It says toys out front.
Oh, does it? Okay. Does it also say sundries?
No.
Feed?
No.
Okay, very good. So, cell phone plans?
Yes.
In 1986, it should.
Yeah, 1986. Big mover, the cell phone plans.
Yeah.
So she's going to head out, and we get the first little character development for Drew Barrymore's character, which is that she doesn't want to be a kid. She, like, her sister asks what she wants for, like, Christmas. She's like, oh, I'm going to get a new blender. And she has to say, like, oh, I'm not a kid anymore. Don't treat me like a kid.
But kids like blenders. You can use them to, like, make frog liquids.
Mangle your hand.
Yeah, you can make a hand-flavored Frappuccino. You can help your mom do interesting, like, kids like cooking.
Yeah, but you're not going to give an 11-year-old a blender.
I mean, you are if that's what they want.
No, you're not.
I mean,
an 11-year-old, fuck them.
I'm just saying.
They're old enough to learn disappointment.
Kids like cooking. She could have said something like a blazer or an attaché case or something.
See, but then she would want to be business. She doesn't want to be business. She's growing up to be like, oh, I take care of the household. Because the mom and the little brother are somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the mom is late. She is not home, but she has little Joey, and they need to go get him some food.
They establish that the mom is routinely behind schedule and not very good at being a mom.
Yeah, like so that's why Drew Barrymore is like, oh, I'm going to have a blender, and I cook, and I've basically become the mom of the house.
Yeah, which is weird because the whole point of this movie is to teach her to be a kid again, but then when she gets back to reality, it's not like her mom has learned how to be a mom.
No, she's going to get back and be like, oh, I realize that toys are great, and I want to be a kid, and her mom's going to be like, that's fine. Anyway, I'm going to be gone for 3 days, make yourself dinners.
You figure it out, and she'll be like, I like pogo balls. And her mom will, I mean, her mom needs to go on a separate journey of discovery for this movie to have any kind of
impact.
Well,
yeah, we need to have Moms in Toyland, which I'm almost certain I've seen before.
I feel like that movie is a very different kind of movie.
It's a very different movie for a very different audience.
Yeah, I mean, even Babes in Toyland is already kind of iffy when it comes to the title.
Yeah, I feel like you could just real easily do the porn parody of this, like, multiple times.
I feel like it needs to be called Babes in Toyland, and then in parentheses, Babes was meant kids in the 60s, and that's what we mean here.
Ah, nah, we gotta have, like, MILFs in Toyland, and mm-hmm. Toys in Babeland.
Sexy 80s-style Babes in Toyland. They're all wearing crop tops. Hair teased out today.
Toys in Babeland, and it'll be fine.
The Toys in Babeland, I sure exists.
Sister goes off to work, and Drew Barrymore watches TV, and then we find out that a big storm is coming, and it's coming from Canada.
So, yeah, a big storm is blowing in that's going to mess with Cincinnati. And Drew Barrymore, I would say that her actual only characteristic in this movie is a puffed-up sense of self-importance and responsibility.
And also, I feel like everyone's character development in this is they cannot use contractions.
Oh, yeah, everyone talks like a Peanuts character from the cartoons.
I don't know if that was just someone very poorly wrote a script and everyone decided, fuck it, I will change not a thing on this.
I mean, no one is famous enough to, like, ad-lib.
I mean, Drew Barrymore, basically.
I don't feel like she was known out of E.T. and what, Firestarter would be the only other...
E.T., Firestarter, that was the big movie she'd been in.
That's pretty much it. I don't think, like, she had earned the clout to try a few things.
The clout.
Yeah, you know, the director. I'm gonna try a separate take on this director, and he's like, you're 11, just put the M&Ms on the ground. Ah. So yeah, this is, I mean, she did that, right? I haven't seen E.T. in forever.
Also, it's Reese's Pieces. Jesus fuck.
I'm sorry, I've watched Mac and Me more recently.
Good.
Power
goes out from the storm, and so she decides it is her duty to go to the store that her sister works at and be like, there's a storm coming, and get her sister for some reason to leave work, but also tell everyone at the store to leave the store.
Yeah, she wants to close the store. Like, she wants this random store to close on Christmas Eve, and she's so convinced of the correctness of this decision that the movie is also, basically, yeah, is what it comes down on, too. And I'm like, how many people in the store are like, fuck you, kid, I have to do this shopping. I have an irritating 11-year-old of my own at home.
Yeah, that I am also ignoring.
Yes, that I am beholden to. And if I don't get that fucking kid a blender, then shit's gonna go all kinds of sideways. So shut the fuck up about storms. Get off the store microphone. No one thinks you're cute.
Yeah, God. I mean, she shows up and just immediately is like, oh, sister, there's a big storm coming, and the TV said it was going to hit Cincinnati. And at that point, I got to be like, how did you get here, kid?
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a weird scene because, like, it's supposed to establish that the owner of this toy store is going to turn out to be the villain in the Toyland universe, you know?
Well, it's all very Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. So we're trying to set up. But the problem is that the movie wants you to be on these kids' side. And based on what happens over the course of the scene, there is no way that would ever happen.
Huh.
Because basically what happens is
everyone's terrible. It's a Christmas movie, so everyone's awful.
Yeah, everyone's a pompous little shit is what it is. It, like, the sister is busy returning a toy. Like, there's a toy sale, and she's returned it for some kind of, like, store exchange or something. And the boss comes through, and he's like, hey, I thought I told you to push them teddy bears. And she's like, well, Mr. Sir, as you will find, it was a perfectly legitimate refund because the toy was defective and the following thing, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, yeah, just push the toys, though. No, I won't.
Also, I'm a dirty pervert creep, and yeah, I'm going to make a lot of sex innuendos.
So he's also gross. So no one in the scene comes out looking good.
No. And then up from the desk, 30 stories tall, comes fucking Drew Barrymore after this conversation where the store manager is a huge pervo, and she's like, you stay away from my sister, blah, and like runs over to the fucking store mic and is like, everyone here, there's a storm coming to Cincinnati, you should get out of this store.
Yeah, and the owner of this store should close it out of a sense of responsibility. And he's like, on my biggest sales night? No, that would bankrupt me.
No, I don't think you understand how business works. You see, this is going to be the sales that I make for about 40% of what I make in a year.
Yeah, starting tomorrow, it's all returns. And returns are bad for business. And I really, this needs to stay open. And thank God an 11-year-old came through here.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the best thing that could happen for me. So also in this scene, we have Keanu Reeves stopping by to hit on the sister.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves, who hits on the sister, and we get
some very weird stuff happens in this conversation.
Well, like, he wants her to join him for a pizza after work, and she's like, I don't think I could eat 3 pizzas. And he's like, well, I just want to take you out for 1 pizza. She's like, oh, but I've had 3 offers.
And then he calls her the Delilah of the Five and Dime.
Yeah.
Which kid is getting that reference?
I don't know, but also, why?
It's kind of a mean thing to call her.
Yeah, like at that point, if she's just joking around about it, then his reaction is like, ah, yes, the old slut of the store. And you're like, whoa, hold on.
She's like, well, I don't think I can eat 3 pizzas. I've already had 2 other offers. And he's like, ah, but would you just like to go with me, town bike? It's such a weird thing to offer as a rejoinder. The other thing is, who are these other 2 people that offer to take her out? It's not Fat Friend.
No, it's
probably just 2 offers from the pervo boss.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's only 2 other people here.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves' fat friend,
mm-hmm,
and the pervy boss.
Yeah.
Which, if she says, I've got 2 other offers, then he's got to be like, oh, wait a minute, I got to go talk to my friend real quick.
Yeah, and then also probably keep a closer eye on the boss than I had been.
The weird thing about this is we get, like, a full-on fucking Jerry Maguire moment here where she eventually convinces her sister to leave, and the boss is like, if you leave, then, like, don't come back, you're going to be fired. She's like, fuck you, it's Christmas Eve, and I should be at home with my family. And I'm like, that's not how retail works.
No, well, the worst part is when she grabs a sled off the shelf and gives it to her sister and is like, here's your Christmas present. And the boss is like, you can't just take a sled.
Oh, deduct it out of the pay you owe me.
Yeah,
that's not how things work.
Yeah, she goes, indeed I can, sir, because the value of this sled is exactly half of the salary you still continue to owe me. He's like, yeah, that isn't that you can't just steal stuff from me and say that I owe you money. what are you, like a repo man? Get the fuck out of here. Leave the sled.
But not only does she manage to leave, but she basically is like, who's coming with me? And fucking Keanu Reeves and his buddy are like, yeah, fuck this store. We're out.
None of us need jobs.
Yeah, it's only good Christmas Eve. I'm fine with being fired.
There's nothing but stable employment available in mid-80s Cincinnati.
Boy, howdy. There's nowhere to go but up from here. What did you do? Well, I quit my job on the busiest night at the worst possible time. Aren't I an employee you want to have working for you?
Please peruse my resume. It's just me flipping you off.
Be sure to call my previous employer for a recommendation. He'll let you know that I was a fucking layabout and an awful person.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Because the problem is this movie is basically trying to use some shorthand to be like, these characters are fun and rebellious, but if you watch it and you're not also 11, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah.
Just call the cops on these kids.
I mean, the thing after this is fucking Keanu Reeves is going to drive all of them home.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's so blustery out there. Now, it takes them a while. Like, they drive for a bit and they start singing that fucking Cincinnati song.
Yeah.
But this, again, makes me go, how did this kid get here? This 11-year-old had to have walked, like, miles in a blizzard. Like, I don't know what was going on here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I assume she took a taxi because she's a full-grown adult. But yeah, we get some really fun fake driving sing-along in a blustery rainstorm. And then all of a sudden, Drew Barrymore's entire seat falls out of the Jeep that they're driving around in.
So the... As a normal Jeep, the back is just sort of a flap.
Mm-hmm.
The flap is open, and she, like, when they hit a pothole or something, she tumbles backwards onto the sled that then falls out of the car.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I was dealing with an angry baby at that moment.
Yes.
So she goes slip-sliding on down this snowy hill.
So she sleds down a hill and hits a tree.
Yeah.
And
then the tree creates a spiral kitchen sink-style effect that sucks her in.
And then she is floating from on high down into Toyland.
Well, so Toyland, somewhere in Germany, but God, it looks like Colonial Williamsburg, or not Colonial Williamsburg the way it looks now, but like one of those old-timey colonial villages you find as tourist traps in the American, like, East.
Honestly, it basically looks like this was filmed at Santa's Village.
Yeah, pretty much. Except less Christmassy.
Less Christmassy, because there's no snow, there's no Christmas stuff. It's called Toyland, but that's pretty much just because, like, some of the characters are like, oh, I'm a Raggedy Ann doll and I'm a teddy bear.
Yeah, there's, well, most people in
or
town
a
are
Jack in the Box.
Yeah, most people in town are just soft, pillowy animal costumes.
Yeah, it's just, what did we have lying around? I'm a pig. I'm Sherlock Frog.
I wanted to learn so much more about Sherlock Frog and that pig, because the pig is wearing, like, a straw boater like he's running for governor in 1870.
Oh, yeah. That pig has big plans for this town.
Yeah.
And Sherlock Frog is on the case.
Sherlock Frog is a frog dressed up as Sherlock Holmes. He gets no lines. He merely appears routinely in the background because they don't have that many frog costumes. They have two.
Now,
because you also have Sherlock Frog's well-meaning wife.
Yeah, you have Mrs. Frog.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, she hates Sherlock Frog, but God damn it, she respects him.
He may not be much of a husband, but damn it, he's a great detective.
So Drew Barrymore's sled lightly falls until it hits a giant cake.
Yes, and then some stuntman falls into a big cake.
And we find out from Georgie Porgy, which is the fat friend. Although they keep calling him fat. I'm like, not really.
You know what? He doesn't know how to dress like a chunky dude. He is accentuating the worst things he's got going
on. Well, especially in the Georgie Porgy outfit. And in his normal outfit, he just sort of looks like a dude.
Yeah, he's just some dude.
In Georgie Porgy, he is wearing the moose knuckliest pants you have ever seen.
Yeah, he's wearing some Humpty Dumpty pants, like, you know, raised up about nipple high to the point where basically, and they keep showing him running away cowardly from the back, which means you have to look at the gross definition of his little ass.
Yeah, he's got some serious crack going on here.
Yeah.
And Georgie Porgy helps
out. It's
kind
of like watching the Tim Burton penguin run away.
Yes.
Constantly. It's like a whole movie of Danny DeVito running around in his penguin long underwear outfit from a couple of the scenes.
So Georgie Porgy helps Drew Barrymore out of a cake.
Yeah.
And is like, oh, this was going to go for a wedding, and I'm so sad because yeah. I have to go to the wedding of my good friend Jack and or good friend Mary, who should be marrying Jack, but is marrying the evil Barnaby Barnacle.
What the fuck, Barnaby Barnacle? Who? What?
Yeah, because it's Mary Contrary.
Yeah.
Jack Nimble Jr.
Yeah.
We get Mary Contrary's mother, old his mother Hubbard.
Yeah.
So you have a whole bunch of these Mother Goose things.
You got Georgie Porgy. Yeah, you got all these. But then also you got the evil guy who lives in a bowling ball attended by two vampires, and his name is Barnaby Barnacle, which is the kind of name you'd get a minor character on, like, the Misadventures of Flapjack.
No, I just thought it would be a minor Popeye villain.
I mean, sure, from, like, the comic strip.
Yeah.
You just want to bring it around to goons again.
I do. I just want to keep bringing it around to goons.
So many goon discussions. But yeah, Barnaby Barnacle sounds like a notorious pirate, what threatens the docks.
And I mean, you already had, if you're going with weird nursery rhyme stuff, you've got, like, the crooked man who lives in a crooked house.
Yeah.
Like, you could do that.
Yeah, or the Grinch, who was a crooked jerky jockey who rode a crooked horse.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe a jerky horse. I don't know. I haven't heard that song in a while.
Yeah, this horse is a real jerk.
Well, he's certainly a crooked horse. Plus, also, I'm pretty sure this guy has garlic in his soul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, yeah, Barnaby Barnacle is, the boss of the toy store, except now he's wearing a weird, evil feather outfit. Like, he's wearing a zombie version of the Crow costume.
He looks like he should be in a fantasy movie as a warlock that can turn into a raven. That is what he looks exactly like.
Sorry, John, I'm a little under
fucked
the weather.
Up. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
I'm all hopped up on Dayquil. I'll try to keep my face away from the mic when it happens.
So, yeah, the Mary is her older sister and Jack is Keanu Reeves. And so she shows up with the rest of the town at this wedding where...
I mean, first of all, I really want to make this clear. If you're allowed to sing or if you're part of the wedding party who gets to be up on the porch, you're not in a goofball animal costume. It's pretty clear that animals don't talk and don't really get to.
No, there's no line from any animal character because these are unmoving mouth animal costumes.
You were pretty far behind in furry technology in 1986, and also in Germany.
Yeah. So the German furry crowd does nothing but background shots.
Yeah.
There's also some dude in a fucking powdered wig that is only in background shots that is constantly mouth agape, and I love him.
I really wanted to know more about him.
Because he is just always flabbergasted at what's going on. He's just,
Which, he's significantly more confused by what should be happening in every given scene than Drew Barrymore, who arrives bursting with the irritating kid opinions.
Oh, she, I mean, does not question anything, which I love. It's just an 11-year-old that rides a sled from heaven onto a cake, gets told it's Toyland, and is like, sweet, I'm on board.
Yeah, Toyland, no problem.
Anyway,
this is Shane Black's Babes in Toyland.
Who, what's going on? Great, I'm on board.
Well, there's a wedding going on, and you don't like, you, the guy who I just met, doesn't like the wedding? Neither do I. I'll try to stop it.
And... So the fucking Judge Grimm is having this wedding and is like, do you take this clearly evil dude to be your husband? I do. Do you take Mary to be your wife? I do.
Yeah.
And right as he's about to say, I pronounce you man and wife, Drew Barrymore is like, wait, she doesn't love him. And
no one in town cares. Everyone in town already knows what this is. That because we've been established, it's been explained to us by Georgie Porgy that the marriage has been arranged by Mother Hubbard because
Barnaby bought the mortgage on their house and is going to kick them out.
Shoe or whatever it is that she lives, because she now lives in a pair of boots.
Well, she lives in the old lady who lived in a shoe's shoe because the old lady had so many kids that she had to move into a pair of boots.
Yes. Yeah, so now instead it's just old Mother Hubbard who lives in the shoe.
But with like 12 different like nursery rhyme children.
Yeah.
Because like Jack Horner and Little Boy Blue and all of them also live with her.
Yeah, just random kids. Like I guess there's a whole bunch of Jacks
in there. I
guess
she's like a foster mom to all of these. And
yeah. What's she must just be like the foster mom from Annie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also she's played by the mom, obviously. The real world mom. So the Mother Hubbard is completely into this marriage because it gets her out of some serious financial jam.
Yeah.
And the daughter is going along with it for the same reason. And everyone in town knows exactly what the score is. But Drew Barrymore pops up and she's like, she doesn't love him. And everyone in town is like, okay, thank you for...
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, we're...
The problem is, I would love it if that was the actual reaction. But instead, this stops the wedding and the entire town stood up and clapped.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a real... It just continues like this, where she just kind of wanders town making pronouncements, and everyone, instead of being like, yeah, you're very new, and you've been here for 5 minutes. You landed in our cake.
Like, everyone around here already knew that she didn't love him, and that she was in love with Jack, but they were just sort of going to stand there and watch it happen, when apparently all they needed to do was go, hey, maybe don't, and it would stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because what happens in this scene is she causes enough of a commotion for Jack to make his move. And his move is to jump up on the porch where the marriage is happening and grab Mary and just hold her. I guess you can't marry her if someone else is holding her.
Although at this point, they've already both said I do, which means,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's already legally binding.
You done fucked up. I mean, they already had the marriage contract drawn up at City Hall before this. This was just the actual wedding ceremony.
Yeah, it's just to look good for the grandparents, but...
Sorry. You accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
But
oh, this is going to cause such consternation amongst the Billy Goats Gruff or whoever.
So, yeah. She manages to get Jack to, like, grab Mary, and they, like, run away from him, and
just stand there.
He calls in his goons, his two weird Max's Shrek.
Yeah, he's got a couple of noses for Ratu.
And... They are Zach and Mac.
Yeah, the sweet life of.
And they show up and are just like if you took Igor and combined him with Nosferatu, that's what these guys would be.
And you had to throw a little Shemp in there, too. Because mostly they're just bumbling idiots who keep running into each other.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, we got a couple of... we got the two stooges of the night, Zach and Mac.
And...
My favorite thing is whenever, for some reason, you can see their shoes, because they're clearly both wearing basketball sneakers.
Well, I looked up, again, on the IMDb, and everyone who wasn't someone you've heard of is just some random German name, which means they just pulled people from, like, whatever extras they could find in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure the rights to play Max Schreck was a big deal then.
Yeah.
I think he was a German guy.
Zach and Max Schreck.
Yeah. These are his useless layabout grandchildren.
So, Barnaby tries to be like, oh, just you wait, and everyone tells him to go fuck himself. He goes back to his bowling ball, and then we get our second big musical number after Cincinnati, where the entire town is like, oh, you're the best ever little girl who came in and ruined a wedding. Let's all parade you around town, and you're the best of the year, and it's a shitty song that sucks.
Yeah, it's just awful. It's completely unearned, because she has done nothing interesting yet. She's just sort of wandering around. It's like celebrating a four-year-old for stopping in the middle of the kitchen and making a weird noise.
It's an entire musical number about how a kid went, hey, no, and everyone's like, good,
no,
yes.
What a wonderful idea.
No one's thought of this before. Let's all put you on our shoulders and parade you about town.
Now for the song, the constant whining of children isn't shitty. I really wish that they would speak up more. It's horrible. We also get the rest of the exposition, which is that Mary and Jack need to get married, which is why Barnaby's trying to marry her.
Well, Jack
needs to marry someone.
Jack is in this universe in Toyland, he needs to be married when he is 21 or else by 21 or else he will not inherit the one thing that matters in town, which is the cookie factory.
Yeah, he needs to inherit the cookie factory, of which Georgie Porgy is the chief taster, by the way.
And Barnaby is Jack's uncle, and so since Jack's father died, either it's going to go to Jack if he's married by 21, or if he's not, it just defaults to his uncle, no stipulations.
Yeah, very unusual. But and
you'd think Jack's dad would know, oh yeah, my brother is the most evil person ever.
Yeah, like before he died, he must have been like, okay, so I'll either leave it to my noble son or the evil brother I have who lives in a bowling ball with some vampires.
Yeah, the evil wizard that lives with vampires in a bowling ball on a hill. Let's probably go with either or. I'm sure it's fine either way.
Yeah, I'm sure that Jack will get... The other thing is that Jack is only willing to marry for love. Because otherwise he could be like, well, okay, fine, Barnaby's marrying my girlfriend so that I can't get married to her in time to take over the factory. I guess I'll just marry Sherlock Frog's wife or something. I don't know. They can't say no. They don't talk. I'll just
polygamy is not allowed.
I'll just find some fucking bear or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if he wants to go, like, I'm going to get Miss Mouse or whatever, one of those mice in the background that's in a fucking sundress.
Yeah.
Then sure.
Just marry old Mother Hubbard. She's boy crazy in this movie.
Oh, yeah. She is ready to fuck.
She is
horny.
She is super thirsty.
She is DTF like you would not believe.
Yeah, so just marry her and you take care of your whole situation. Then you get to keep the cookie factory and the weirdo in the bowling ball doesn't. Simple, right? He can't marry everyone in town. Just keep proposing to women, Jack. Your problem is not that complicated.
No, it is, because this is a fairy tale, and I mean, honestly, it's just the weird dream of an 11-year-old, so,
yeah,
you know,
true.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so
we check in with Barnaby, and his bowling ball is apparently just an entrance to an underground gross lair?
Yeah, I mean, once you go inside that bowling ball, it's just dark crystal in there.
Oh, yeah. It's just, he has a... I don't know if it's a pet or a friend that is a Trollog.
The Trollalog.
The Trollog is a... Imagine a big, nasty chicken with one eyeball and about six testicles around its neck.
Nancy Grace, got it.
How long were you waiting to say that?
From the moment you said big, nasty chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Like, but yeah, he's a cyclopean, black, evil chicken who is very clearly just a little person in a terrible costume who indeed, yes, has six testicle-like growths bedangling from his neck.
Yeah, just little individual scrotes.
Yeah.
Hanging from his neck.
Chat sack solos.
And it turns out that Trollog can use his one eye to show whatever. It's basically like a crystal ball.
Yeah, he can also show like the future in addition to what's going on right now.
No, he can't.
I thought there was a scene where he showed the future or the past or something.
No.
I thought he threatened everyone with the horrors of World War II at one point.
Wrong movie.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Okay. Anyway, yeah, it turns out he just has closed-circuit TV available for anywhere in town.
Yeah, so he can just... Trollog can close his eye and open it back up, and then Barnaby gets to spy on whatever.
But he also has his two vampires in there, and then just some random trolls who shuffle about in the same manner as the Garthim from Dark Crystal, which was a real problem, because between introducing a little bird man and also having those shuffling monsters in the background, this very much was a Skeksis kind of scene.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't hurt that he's wearing a feather headdress for a shoulder collar, either.
Yeah, I mean, he really is just like, oh, you might as well be like the chancellor or whatever.
Now me, emperor, kind of situation when he's in there. Go, crystal bats! Release the Gotham!
Also, the trolls in here, he calls them trolls, but they basically look like big seaweed monsters.
Yeah, they're kind of like nature spirit kind of situations. They are confusing looking and not shown very often.
So we get to have a quick jaunt over to the cookie factory. Yay.
So the cookie factory is basically empty. There's because Lord knows they don't want to show any of them teddy bear people or whatever unless they're outside just sort of walking around as if they're late for cotillion.
Now, the cookie factory is the same room that they had dressed up to be the store, which will also be the same room that is the Toy Master's room. It's basically, if we go inside anywhere, it is this room.
Yeah, with the exception of the evil cave and I think the jail cell. But yeah, other than that, every single one of these rooms is just the same room.
It's just the same room, but they stripped it down and put everything back up.
Yeah.
So they had one soundstage that they could use.
Yeah. So so Georgie's just giving everyone a tour of the cookie factory. I guess Drew Barrymore deserves a tour for being the big hero who was like, no. And so that's what's happening here. Then all of a sudden, Barnaby pops in. He's like, you can't be here. Get out. And they have a quick discussion about how, you know, he doesn't own the cookie factory yet.
Yeah. And then they get in the vehicles of Toyland, which are like go-kart frames that have then had the cheapest plastic. Like, it looks like this is from an abandoned 70s theme park.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've got like those little peace, love, flowers
you're
on them.
You're completely right. They're from like Adventure World in Florida in 1972.
Yeah, this definitely looks like...
Kids died in these.
Like, this was a go-kart that had been sitting out in the elements for a while.
Yeah.
And someone just slapped a coat of paint on it.
They're a cut scene from Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny.
Yeah, it is... It's real, real ridiculous.
Yeah, and they drive around making fart noises.
Yeah, they're just...
Yeah. Also, they are. Whenever anyone's driving around them, there is constant horns because they just foleyed that in.
Oh yeah.
So everyone's just driving around. Honk, 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 you think everyone in town would be like, "Fucking stop it!
Quit honking the fucking horn!
No one is impeding you. Why are you doing? I'm trying to conduct boring bear business.
I wish I could tell you to stop it, but I have no ability to talk because I am just a teddy bear. I must scream, and I have no mouth. The teddy bear story.
Sherlock Frog is on the case.
Sherlock Frog will find your mouth.
So yeah, they just fully in horns for no reason, as if these guys are just driving around honking like assholes, which I would not put it past them.
We set up, Drew Barrymore tries to play matchmaker with old Mother Hubbard and Barnaby.
I love that that goes nowhere, but shows up over and over again.
It shows up at least twice.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I guess that's going to be how this resolves, and then isn't.
Yeah.
Because she's like, ooh, old Mother Hubbard, why don't you marry Barnaby? I hear he likes you. And she's like, ooh, oh, Barnaby, that I could definitely throw down with the definitely evil, ugly, like, raven wizard.
Yeah, the dude who lives in the slime cave, you know, that guy.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm down for that, whoever.
He's wearing one cap over all his teeth, you know, so it looks like he just bit into an ice cream sandwich all the time.
Yeah.
That guy, you want to hook up with him?
The guy who's got like a 3-inch thumbnail that's black.
Yeah, definitely the sort of guy you would encounter under a bridge at a music festival.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy, you're super into this, right?
Oh, you know, of course I am. I'm old Mother Hubbard, and I want any dick I can find.
And not just any bridge, but the bridge that everyone in the music festival calls Drug Bridge. Yeah, but I don't know why they keep... It's twice that Drew Barrymore tries this move, and then it just ends with him being a big villain who gets defeated. It's kind of like if Luke Skywalker, in an attempt to play off Darth Vader, tried to hook him up with Mon Mothma.
Ah.
He was like, hey there, Vader. You seem pretty angry. Why don't you hook up with this Chancellor of the Rebellion?
That ought to fix things.
And Mon Mothma's all like, a man!
So Barnaby's big plan right now is he has all these caves that go from his weird cave all around town, and one specifically that opens up underneath the cookie factory.
Yeah, and it opens up, it's the same slide everywhere you go. It doesn't matter if
all of the slides go to the same prison cell.
And it's all the same slide imagery.
Yeah.
It's the same slide down a cave, no matter where the door opens up.
But he goes and opens up a trap door in the cookie storage room, steals all the cookies, and frames Jack for the crime.
Yeah, this is a pretty bare-bones crime attempt. He's just like, yes, they'll never find the cookies once I throw them in this cave. And then, you know, he goes and accuses Jack of this to Judge Grimm, who I guess is also Policeman Grimm. No, Lord knows they don't bring the two teddy bear cops into this scene.
Yeah, Judge Grimm is just like, well, I guess I have to arrest you. And you're like, for what?
Under
all we know
authority?
Is that the cookies are missing.
Yeah. He's like, look in this room. There used to be cookies in this room, and there aren't. Arrest him. And there's no point where he's just like, well, I didn't previously see the cookies in this room. This is a very tenuous cause for arrest.
Well, he's like, oh, who is in charge of making sure that these cookies are safe? I am, which at that point means I'm bad at my job, not that I stole them.
Yeah. And moreover, he could be like, I am, and there weren't any cookies in this room.
Except, you know, there were. But he's not going to lie. He's a good guy.
I guess that's fair, yeah. But even
what he could do is go, I did not steal several thousand cookies. Please check anywhere that I have been. Also, here are four alibis that have been with me all day.
Yeah, we've been hanging around with this random girl who fell into our cake from the sky and just kind of, you know, celebrating her all day. I've got an airtight alibi.
Yeah, I've been hanging out with Georgie Porgy and the Sky Witch, and... Yeah.
No problem, right? Also, how are you going to arrest me? You're a judge.
Ugh.
You're not like a Judge Dredd.
No, but I mean, there is a police bear there.
Yeah.
Because a police bear shows up in the best vehicle in town.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's driving Judge Dredd around in one of those things that's used to carry people from the outside of the parking lot at Disneyland
gates. Oh, he's got a little tram.
Yeah, he's got a people mover.
But the front of it is like a little car with a giant police hat on top.
Yeah, it's got a big old molded plastic police hat built onto the top of it that looks for all the world like it was stolen from a 1970s McDonald's play place.
Oh yeah. This was definitely taken from like Officer McCheese's play place.
I've been trying for like a day and a half now to remember what Officer McCheese's name was. And you know what? Officer McCheese is fine.
I'm sure. I mean, it's Mayor McCheese, but I'm sure there's plenty of nepotism in McDonald's.
Yeah, it's his no good nephew.
Yeah.
Officer McCheese.
Oh, Officer McCheese. You aren't qualified to be on the force, but your dad is the mayor, and so here we are.
Uncle McCheese, would you like to make a contribution to the benevolent Cheese Policeman's Association?
Oh, McDonald Land. That's a whole nother story.
Extraordinarily corrupt.
The corruption in McDonald Land is rampant.
Yeah, the McCheese family got a real stranglehold on that place. It was a bad time. The 1970s, you did not want to be a fry guy.
I mean, it's weird because Mayor McCheese only went down for tax evasion in the end.
I know. That's how they finally got him. It was arrogance. If he had just kept his books clean, he'd still be running things.
Yeah, but no. Anyway, Babes in Toyland. The big plan that they have now is to just bust Jack out of jail and go see the Toy Master.
Yeah, at a certain point, they become convinced, specifically Drew Barrymore more or less becomes convinced, that the Toy Master, who's just this dude in town who makes toys.
Yeah, he's just the guy that makes toys.
Yeah, is like the deus ex machina of this movie. Like, she's convinced he is, and he routinely and repeatedly is not.
I mean, let's say I'm an 11-year-old. I show up in a place called Toyland, and a dude is called the Toy Master. I'd be like, oh, this guy's a wizard.
I mean,
this guy
yeah.
is obviously the king of Toyland.
But I mean, they meet him once, and he's just like, oh, hello.
I'm Pat Morita.
I'm Pat Morita. I can't help you. Go away. And they do, and then another problem comes up, but she's like, I know, the Toy Master.
You've already gone to that well a few times. It is dry, Drew.
Yeah, but she's super drunk. I mean, come on.
To be fair.
She had a late night with Rod Stewart's touring group. She don't remember.
So, they break Jack out of jail by distracting the judge
with tales of the wonders of Cincinnati.
Now, this is from 1986, and the thing that she uses to distract the judge is tales of Pete Rose.
That's right. Pete Rose keeps popping up throughout the course of this movie.
And, you know, it's great to be like, oh, man, the only thing you have to be proud about in Cincinnati is Pete Rose. And that is not going to last once he actually, like, goes to jail for, like, gambling fraud.
Just ye wait, young girl.
It's so sad. You had one thing and then it got taken away from you.
Oh, no. The beautiful locks of Pete Rose locked away.
Oh.
What is Cincinnati going to be proud of now? The Bengals?
No.
So, but yeah, I mean, that happens a lot. Like when she meets Pat Morita and he's like, oh, you're from Cincinnati? You must be very proud of your Pete Rose.
I know what Cincinnati is. Oh, that's the other thing is Barnaby, when she says that she is from Cincinnati, he will call her Little Cincy Wutsky throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
This movie is obsessed with Cincinnati, and it feels like this should have been a TV movie that only aired in Cincinnati.
Which is weird because it was made in Germany for air in Cincinnati. That doesn't really line up for me.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
That this movie is so obsessed with Cincinnati. Now, I don't know anything about the original operetta.
Yeah.
If it was also based in Cincinnati, but if you're going to scrap the entire, like, musical score, mm-hmm. you feel like you could scrap the whole Cincinnati thing as well.
Yeah. I feel like an operetta that was written to be set in Cincinnati feels a little off to me. Like if someone wrote a full symphonette about Pittsburgh or something.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah, so anyway.
But I mean, if you're talking about back in time, there were people who were like super proud of being from St. Louis.
That's true.
And then that's just a shithole now.
I mean, there still are those kinds of people. Mostly they're Bostonians. Shut the fuck up about Boston.
Or New York.
Yeah, that one's, at least that one's on TV all the time.
Well, at least New York, you're like, oh yeah, well, I always talk about New York and how everything compares to New York and how in New York we do things this way, but at least New York is an actual city that matters.
I guess that's true. What do they got in Boston? Some kind of sandwich? I don't know.
What do you got, beans? You fuck? Clam chowder? Get out of here.
The Liberty Bell, is that right? I don't remember.
The Liberty Bell's...
In Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, not in Boston. You know, Boston, that borough of New York.
Why not?
Fuck it.
I don't know. I mean, my primary interest in Boston is in the band Boston.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
That's everyone's primary interest in Boston.
And let me tell you about Chicago. Same thing.
The band.
Just same thing.
It's the band.
Same, yeah. The, you know, you're the meaning in my life. Great song.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So anyway, they bust
the toy
Jack
master.
Out of jail.
Yeah.
And lock the judge in jail, and we don't see him until the end of the movie.
Yeah, at which point he's pretty happy. He's like, just yay, these kids are great.
I don't care.
I love these kids that locked me in jail for 3 days.
I've been surviving off toilet wine for the past 3 days, but yay, these children.
Oh, he's a Toyland denizen. He eats residual air cookie.
Ah, that air cookie.
He's fine.
That definitely sounds like a vape flavor.
Residual air,
residual air cookie.
Yeah. All right. So they go to see the toy master, and the toy master's basically just like, yes, hello, I make toys. I'd like to show you something. And he opens a little door, and it's like some toy soldiers.
Yeah.
He's like, look at these. Look at these crappy giant toy soldiers.
Nobody wants toy soldiers anymore. And I'm like, yeah, nobody ever wanted a toy soldier that was like 5 feet tall,
let alone hundreds of them. What did you make those for?
What did you think was going to happen with these?
The children these days have moved beyond the wooden toy soldier, he says, as he's clearly just making other old-fashioned wooden-y crap in his...
Oh, yeah. Like, his fucking workshop is full of, like, little displays where a hedgehog, like, spins a well or something. It's like, what?
Someday I would love to see one of these movies with a Santa workshop that's, like, modernized completely.
Oh, yeah. Just a modern Santa workshop and everything back there is just electronics.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, elves and fucking, like, goggles.
Yeah, just soldering together Nintendo Switches.
Yeah.
That's just... And that's all that's in there. One whole room is just a dude stamping out gift cards.
I would love that.
Yeah.
But always, forever, it's the, like, 1900 version of Santa's workshop where he's like, oh, I'm making all these toys for the good girls and boys of the world. Here's a little wooden train that no one wants.
And here's a great selection of balls. Look at them all, in various sizes. Huge balls, tiny balls, balls that are bouncing to the left and to the right.
Would you like to play with my balls? Children love to play with my balls.
The Toy Master's balls. They're delicious.
I go all around the country and leave children my balls in their sack.
But yeah, it's always teddy bears, balls, and wooden trains.
Yeah.
And then the movies always even throw in the jokes that are like, oh, kids don't even care about wooden trains anymore. I'm making a wooden train. You're like, come on, do the thing. Just show them making an Xbox. Soldering together the chunks. Let's do this.
Yeah. So,
like, they should be illegally pirating it too. Like, just some elf in there, like, hurriedly pirating old Xbox games on DVDs.
That would be great. Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, the Toy Master is useless. He just shows them around and is like, oh, well, I'm just here to tell you that I've got so many Chekhov guns. Here are all of these giant soldiers. Let's close that door. Behind this door, let me tell you a secret. Here's a bottle of pure evil.
That was the weirdest thing. He was just like, he pulls this green vial out of a secret closet that's got multiple key locks on it.
And he tells them before, he's like, I've never told anyone about this, but I'll tell you.
Because you're from Cincinnati, a place that's trustworthy. And then he's like, here's my bottle where I've gone around Toyland and collected all the evil in Toyland.
Whenever I deliver toys to people around the world, I like to take the evil I find, distill it, and put the essence in this bottle. Now, obviously, I can't fit all of the world's evil in here, but I could try and fit Barnaby's in there. Anyway, bottle of evil! Just got it! I'll put it back on the shelf now.
Here's a free spare bottle of evil. What? How is that connected to the rest of your story, Toy Maker? Oh, don't worry about it.
I know I'm a simple toy maker, but also I can extract the pure essence of people and put it into a bottle.
As long as it's evil. I don't have a corresponding bottle of good.
Yeah, it's very weird. It is an odd thing that is only there because when he shows them that, of course, Barnaby is watching through the Trollog eye at them.
I mean, the one thing I did kind of like about the Bottle of Evil scene is that the whole rest of his workshop is like, oh, it's 1890, and here's a diligent woodcrafter making a whole bunch of pointless shit that only a kid in 1890 would want.
Yeah.
And only if they already have a hoop and a stick. And then he opens up that closet with the evil bottle, and in there are, like, toy cars and little models of apartment buildings and stuff.
Yeah, it's real weird in that.
That's where he's keeping his out-of-time, anachronistic other toys and his bottle of evil.
Yeah, it's where I keep the things nobody should ever get their hands on. Modern toys and a bottle of evil.
Such a weird cabinet. And a gun.
So, I like that over the course of this, your Pat Morita has just started...
He's Sulu, yeah.
Yeah, slowly shifting into Sulu.
He kind of sounds like him in the beginning, so that's where it came from for me.
They get nothing out of the Toy Master, and the Toy Master has... just nothing. And instead, they find Georgie Porgy has a cookie, and they're like, where did you get that? Oh, I found it at the factory. I thought it was going to be evidence. It is evidence, and you are eating it. Oh, continues eating it.
Yeah, he's obsessed with cookies. The first thing he does when he meets Drew Barrymore's character in this movie is offer her a cookie from his hat. And he's like, here, you want this cookie? It's only touched my hair a lot.
It's just been in my greasy hair. Would you like this?
Yeah, at least it was nowhere near my huge brown butt crack. Because I'm dressed like Humpty Dumpty, who's also a character in this film.
So they go check out the factory, and that is when Jack gets caught in a slide down into the prison.
Yeah, which leads to him being confronted by his evil uncle, Barnaby, who sings the worst villain song.
The worst song, and I wouldn't even say sings the song as much as just walks around saying it.
Yeah, it's basically a slowed down spoken word version of an Alice Cooper reject song.
Yeah,
because he's really proud of having Monster Piece. He's so proud of having come up with the phrase Monster Piece
that he is like, I will have all these creatures, don't you see? I'm evil. I've made a monster piece.
At any point, I kept expecting Keanu Reeves to be like, hold on, like, you mean like Monster Piece Theater, the Cookie Monster thing from Sesame Street? The thing from like 1974, like 12 years before this? Is that the thing you're referring to?
Shut up.
I'm just saying, it seems like you're cribbing from Sesame Street, which is
I've never seen it.
Weird thing for a villain to do.
Fully me, all original.
Would you also sing your secondary villain song, E is for Evil? That's bad enough for me.
So, yeah, probably the worst song in here is the monster piece, I want to say.
I would say just the generic Cincinnati song is worse.
Oh, you know, I love the Cincinnati song.
It's fine, whatever. They're all bad.
Love the Cincinnati song.
Fair enough.
It's not just Natty.
That was great. Since he wasn't good enough, and since it was awful Natty, they changed the name to Cincinnati, and now that's still the name. I don't really remember how the song goes.
Oh, yeah. It's just, even in the song that's supposed to be like, oh, our teams are great, and our city is wonderful, they're still like, our town was kind of shitty, so they named it Cincinnati.
The Bengals never win, and that's the way we like it. We aren't known for any regional foods. Just the second city that you think of when you think of Ohio. First you think of Columbus, and then you spend 5 minutes, and then you...
Remember, Cincinnati exists.
So anyway, that's the Cincinnati song. But yeah, he gets the entire Monster Piece song sung to him.
And this is now just basically little vignettes where everyone else is going to fall down a hole into this fucking trap.
Yeah, some of them try to go out into the forest that stops anyone in town from leaving. The Forest of...
Night?
The Forest of Everlasting Night.
Yeah, and... They get trapped there. I think the only person who doesn't is like Drew Barrymore, who again is like, I know, the Toy Master.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it turns out that fucking Barnaby and the Trollog wait for them there, capture them, and then he gets the key and steals the bottle of evil.
Yeah, this, because basically Georgie Porgy and the Mary Contrary are running through the forest, and they fall down a different trap, and they end up in the same building as the trapped Jack. So now the three of them are trapped, and then, yeah, but at this point, Drew Barrymore's alone, and she's just like, well, I can't think of anything. I'll check with the Toy Master again. And he's like, why do you keep coming here?
There's nothing here for you. I can't do anything.
I'm not special.
I make toy. Do you want a toy? I can give you a toy.
I will give you a toy and a sip from the bottle of evil. It's better if you mix it with some lemonade.
I've got a little Kahlua and evil.
What do you think a sip from the bottle of pure evil tastes like, John?
Ooh, a sip from the bottle of pure evil. What was that?
Jepson's Malort.
Malort. That is definitely what it tastes like.
Whatever the local Cincinnati equivalent of Jepson's Malort is.
Yeah, the low-end dollar store version of Jepson's Malort is what the bottle of evil tastes like.
McJepson's McMalort. I really hope that there isn't a really heavy Irish population in Cincinnati, because that might come off as kind of racist or insensitive. But I don't know. I don't know if anyone lives in Cincinnati at all.
No one knows anything about Cincinnati.
Anyway.
So Barnaby gets the bottle of evil, and they trap Trollog and, like, paint his eye?
Oh, that was horrible. Yeah. So basically, they leave, they tie up Drew Barrymore and the Toy Master, and then he, Barnaby leaves, and he's like, now with this bottle of evil, I can conquer all of this,
I'm gonna
town.
Use evil on my already evil trolls, which will make them unconquerable.
Yeah, which did not work.
I don't understand how that's gonna work, but sure, whatever.
But then he leaves, and he's like, I'll leave this Trollog to deal with you. And then the Trollog just sort of menaces at them.
Yeah, just kind of goes, wah, wah, wah. And then they paint his eye over, which is very disturbing to be like, oh, I used black paint on this creature's eyeball.
That's pretty cruel, given that it has not hurt them in any way.
No.
It's just sort of menaced at them. Also, the poor thing is played by the only other actor of any kind of note in this movie. The person who plays the Trollog also played Hoggle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they trap the Trollog in some giant, like a chest that you would find treasure in.
I feel like Georgie Porgy is still there, too, in that scene. I don't.
It's probable.
I think the other two managed to get trapped, but not Georgie.
Yeah.
Anyway,
they all eventually get trapped.
I didn't notice him because of shrinkage.
Barnaby, when he has all four of them trapped, his plan is to turn...
He's going to use
Turn
the
Drew Barrymore
evil.
Into his new Trollog?
Yeah, he actually singles her out. He's like, here's my plan.
Little Cincy Watsky.
Yeah, he's going to open up. Once he's got them all captured, his plan is that he's going to open up the bottle of evil.
And
the vapors from it will turn everyone into trolls. But then he's like, but you, little Cincy Watsky, you're going to be my new Trollog. And it's like, how? You're pretty clear on what that bottle of evil does.
Also, we never really get a, like... ending for what happened to Trollog. He went into that like
he's
giant
just locked
chest,
in the chest, yeah,
and then we never see him again.
Oh, the paint was super toxic. It was full of benzenes and phthalates and
well, you
PCBs.
See, inside of that that chest is some radiated material. Mm. Now, Trollog is both alive and dead until we open this chest.
It's just a cesium atom in there. No, it was just an Iron Maiden.
Oh, yeah.
They put him in there and then just squished him to death, poked a bunch of holes in him.
So he releases the evil vapors on the squad, and apparently Drew Barrymore is immune because she's from Cincinnati.
Yeah, because Cincinnati people are apparently used to evil vapors.
Yeah, evil vapors doesn't really do anything to someone from Cincinnati.
I don't know if that was what the intent was, like if they meant to insult Cincinnati at that point by being like, oh yeah, Cincinnati is so nasty and smoggy and full of like old cigarillo smoke that no one there is affected by any green air.
Oh yeah, because everyone else is like, oh god, oh no, I'm turning evil, and she's like, huh, I can breathe in this evil just fine, doesn't affect me none, fuck you guys.
But then she's like, sings the Cincinnati song to them.
Now this is where everything breaks down for me.
Yeah,
because she's like, oh, I'm immune because I'm from Cincinnati, which means Cincinnati is magical, which means if I begin singing the Cincinnati song, I will snap these people out of their evilness.
Yeah.
Now,
and also they all know the Cincinnati song because they are breaking the illusory wall of dreams.
Yeah, I was like, why do these characters from Toyland who have no idea what Cincinnati is know the lyrics to this weird show tune Cincinnati song?
It'd be like if Dorothy had been like, oh, and Scarecrow, you have the third bedroom in my house. And he's like, I know, Dorothy.
Indeed, yes.
I'm the same character as your gardener or whatever it was that I was in the first part of that movie. No one remembers the black and white part.
I'm a farmhand of some type.
That's probably right.
I don't know, pigs,
I don't know from pigs.
I do not know from pigs. That's me, the Scarecrow.
So they do a thing where their plan is to pretend that the bottle worked.
Yeah, they all go and hunch over and pretend to be trolls.
Yeah, and oh my god, the Drew Barrymore is laying this on a little too thick is the thing.
Yeah, she like goes up to the cage, is like, the master, we're all evil now, and we want to serve you.
Three roars for our horrible master. It's like, no, just zombie, don't.
Just zombie out, quit laying it on. But of course, Barnaby's like, nice.
Nice, this is perfect. Yes, we've gathered here today to roast our wonderful master, because we roast the ones we love.
A roast is the most evil thing we could think of.
Joining us now, Ogre Ruth Buzzy.
So he lets them out because he's like, ah, good, you're all evil now. Come join my group of trolls.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack just punches him in the face and they run away.
Yeah, they just run off. And he's like, that fucking does it. No more Mr. Nice Barnaby Barnacle.
Now I'll unleash all this evil on these trolls like was my plan originally.
Yeah, and then they run off to warn the Toy Master because Lord knows that worked the first two times.
In the third time, the Toy Master's like, look, sure, yeah, you know what? You know what? Yeah, I am magic. I'm fucking a wizard. You know, that's what I am. But you know what? Can't use my powers because someone here doesn't believe in toys.
Stop the presses. What? That's that. Because that was just like, wait, which one of us doesn't believe in toys? It must be you, kid from Cincinnati. It must be you who doesn't believe in toys. And she's just like, no, because I want to be a grown-up. Instead of like, what do you mean I don't believe in toys? We're in a room full of fucking toys. What the fuck are you talking about?
You know, you keep saying I'm not a kid. You should be acting like a kid and you should believe in toys.
I do believe in toys. Everyone believes in toys. No one thinks toys are a fairy tale.
Oh, well, I guess I still have a teddy bear from when I was younger. Oh, that means you believe in toys. Great. Full pass.
All right, there you go. Now she believes in toys. What the fuck was that?
Like, the fact that she still had a teddy bear somewhere. Not that she even, like, oh yeah, I still sleep with a teddy bear. It's, I still own one. I have not gotten around to throwing out a teddy bear. Oh, okay. You pass.
I mean, she could have just been like, oh yeah, also I landed in town in a fucking sled.
That's not a toy. That's, anyone could use that. Grown-ups use it. In fact, industrialists use a sled.
I mean, they also use a teddy bear, just not for the reasons you think.
Ooh. It's for plays.
It's for symbolism. Yeah.
It's for symbolism. I use this teddy bear only for symbolism. Thank you. Please do not cuddle that teddy bear. That is the symbolism teddy bear.
It has debt written on its stomach, so if you wouldn't mind.
Pee-pee, doo-doo, I am a bad president written on this teddy bear.
It was trenchant commentary.
So yeah, finally she believes in the magic of toys and being a child, and that's enough to bring the toy soldiers to life. And
yeah, and then
out they come.
They start playing that Martika song.
And out come the toy soldiers, and the trolls are ruining town. And
oh, yeah.
The town's response is to build a full-on Les Mis barricade out of, like, chairs and things they could find.
I think my favorite part of that scene is once the town's finished building the barricade, one of the bear police officers realizes he's on the wrong side.
He's just like, oh no!
And then the trolls just sort of pick him up and then put him back down.
They're like, and I don't know what I was going to do with this.
It's like a team building exercise. You got to lift him up, then you release him, and then it's lunchtime, guys.
Also, they break down that barricade in like one move. They're just like, and I'll lift up a chair, and anyway, I'll walk through this.
Mostly, the people in town are just sort of walking around at a brisk pace anyway, and they keep moving the Jack in the Box.
Which is great, because the Jack in the Box can't move themselves, so they got to just be moved around.
Yeah, and they just keep picking him up and putting him down in random places and then repeating that shot.
Yeah. The city is attacked by trolls, and the trolls are menacing people without really doing anything?
Although, to be very clear, the person who leads the charge on the barricade is just Barnaby again.
Yeah.
He's the one who just runs up and starts laying about him with a stick and picking up the crap in the barricade.
I love that when they're going around town and menacing people, there is a shot where one of the townsfolk with a broom just starts wailing on Barnaby with the broom end, and I was like, nice.
Yeah.
I don't know that was in the actual script of this, but someone was like, I'm just going to beat the fuck out of this actor with a broom.
This is also the last time we saw Sherlock Frog for a while, so we were convinced he had died, and that you could still see his mourning widow frog wandering around.
So, of course, the climax of this is the toy soldiers surround the trolls and shoot them?
Which doesn't kill a single troll. They just get driven into the woods.
Yeah.
And then Judge Grimm shows up, and they're like, we didn't steal the cookies. He did. And he fed them to those trolls. And Judge Grimm's like, okay, so some cookies I never saw in the first place weren't stolen by who I thought they were, and they were they're gone now because they were fed to trolls. You know what? I have all the evidence I need.
Well, I'm a judge that doesn't give a fuck about anything, so sure, why not? I now decree you are banished to the forest forever.
Yes, and remember, when I killed your brother... So yeah, he banishes Barnaby to the forest forever. Barnaby just sort of yells and rants and raves and then gets shoved out of town. And then Pat Morita shows up, but now he's not the Toy Master anymore. I guess he's still the Toy Master, but it turns out the Toy Master is actually the Santa Claus.
Good. We got a sweet Asian Santa.
We had to stick Christmas in here somehow.
Well, yeah. And Pat Morita's like, hop aboard my magical sled. I don't have real deer. I've carved these out of wood because I'm an asshole. And
reindeer are expensive.
I can't feed those. All I make is toys. What am I going to feed them? Toys?
They do eat toys if you starve them long enough. Oh, I've learned that.
Oh, the hard way.
Oh, these stupid reindeer have no use for toys made out of spruce bark and delicious grass anymore.
So we get the marriage of Jack and Mary.
With the hilariously stated as a sentence moral of their story, Drew Barrymore saying, young people should be allowed to get married if they want.
I think dogs should vote. Thank you, Drew Barrymore.
Let me in your private club. Just that's her general opinion on the matter. That's why she's been all strident about this the entire film, is she thinks young people should be allowed to get married if they want.
Great.
But only to other young people.
And while there had been a running theme of maybe Barnaby and Old Mother Hubbard were going to hook up, at the very end, like, her and the judge are like, hey, you aren't seeing anybody, is you?
Hey, you need a bone in your cupboard?
Old Mother Hubbard, you get it?
Yeah?
You get it?
Andrew Dice Clay did this joke around this time, too, huh? Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, to wins. So, yeah, they get married, and then Drew Barrymore gets into the back of Santa's sleigh and flies off into the night with Pat Morita.
Yeah, and then she wakes up in her own house where her mom's like, what the heck? She's like,
oh, good.
I had a dream, and you were all there. And then, for some reason, Fat Fred is like, I bet the villain of that dream was that evil guy who owns the toy store.
He was.
He was.
How did you know?
Oh my gosh, yeah. She came out of it, she's like, so I realized that young people should be allowed to get married if they want. I've learned a valuable lesson.
The purpose of this dream is I realized two things. One, toys are real. I believe in them now. Two, young people should be able to marry. I'm talking 13.
Luckily, we're in Ohio, so I have no further issues to raise.
As far as I know, there are no rules in Ohio. Anything goes. It is a true wasteland.
You can do whatever. Pick up a bride or two.
Just on your way at the local McDonald's, you can pick up a black coffee and a bride for an extra 50 cents.
It's 1995. Come on down and pick up three brides and a glass-etched mug of The Last Action Hero. Available today at Burger King.
So,
at this point, I'm picturing Ohio as like the kind of post-apocalypse place where all the dudes are greasy hooligans and all the women are like model salon hot.
Oh, yeah. And they're all just wearing like various torn outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the very end, we get a little toy soldier underneath the tree and it salutes Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I remember saluting Drew Barrymore right around 1997, 1998.
Don't do that.
What? I'm just saying she was hot.
Don't do that.
No.
Don't make me think of that. Don't tell me about you running your hands up the flagpole.
I'm not saying I you know what? You're right. I apologize. I'm just thinking of them Charlie's Angels movies.
You know what? Attracted to Drew Barrymore.
Was she in them? I feel like she was one of the three Charlie's Angels, right? It was her and Cameron Diaz and Lucy Liu. Is that right?
I don't know. Was it Uma Thurman? That seems like a role Uma Thurman could have.
It seems like something Uma Thurman wouldn't turn down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I honestly don't know. I've never seen one.
You've never seen an Uma Thurman?
Yeah, I've never seen an Uma Thurman in real life. I don't believe in them.
I don't believe in Uma Thurmans.
I gotta go see the Uma Thurman Master. Hey, just make Uma Thurmans.
No one really wants to play with the wooden Uma Thurmans anymore.
I've got a whole room full of wooden Uma Thurmans. Now, if you'll excuse me.
No one wants to play with the Baron Munchausen Uma Thurmans. They all just want to play with Beatrix kiddos. I've got a whole back room full of old poison ivies that no one will even touch.
Yeah, God no. Who wants that?
I've run out of Uma Thurmans I can think of.
Also, I guess anything else with Uma Thurman, that when Letterman was like Oprah Uma, that one, I don't know, the Oscars?
Something, not Uma Thurmans.
Yeah.
The end.
I'm the Uma Thurman Master.
Are you the gatekeeper?
So that's the end of the movie. Holy balls.
This was really bad, John.
Jeff?
There was no bad dads, though.
There was no bad dads. Well, because I'll announce right now, before we even get into our best and worst in the ratings and everything we normally do, we are 2 weeks from now taking the week off, because that is the week of Christmas. So technically, there's only going to be one movie mastery for the month of December, so you can't really have a themed month with one movie.
Yeah, but the theme is going to be tangentially Christmas.
Yeah, tangentially Christmas.
Yeah.
If we do this again, we can watch, I don't know, Die Hard.
Or Gremlins, whatever. I feel like Gremlins is a bit more...
Is slightly more Christmassy.
It's a little more connected to Christmas. That's a good point.
But anyway, let's go ahead and do our best and worst. Jeff, give me the best thing, Babes in Toyland 1986.
Oh, it's definitely the Cincinnati song.
Oh, fuck yes it is.
Oh, shit. I was kind of hoping that would piss you off because you wanted it.
Oh, no. Like, I don't care. If you say it is, I am jumping on that bandwagon because the Cincinnati song is the only thing in that movie that I was like, hey, this is almost upbeat.
No, I'm cool with Pat Morita Santa Claus. I think that's my favorite thing in this movie.
That's a good thing to have.
As the Toy Master, I didn't give a shit because he was just a boring dude. He didn't do anything. He was like, quit visiting me, kid. I don't do anything.
God damn it.
But when he shows up at the end of Santa Claus, you're like, holy shit, it's Asian Santa. I'm way into this.
This is great. Yeah. I love it. Pat Morita as Santa Claus?
There should be more things with Pat Morita as Santa Claus, or given that, you know, he's probably doesn't work as much as these days. Maybe like, you know, Ken Jeong Santa Claus. I'd watch that. You know, Donnie Yen is in his mid-50s. He'd play a pretty good Santa.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Oh, dude. A Donnie Yen martial arts Santa movie?
A Donnie Yen Christmas.
A very Donnie Christmas. And then in parentheses, not Osmond.
Yeah, sure. So that's our best, because yeah. I am obviously taking the Cincinnati song, because I fucking love it. I love the Cincinnati song in the same way that I love simply having a wonderful Christmas time, which is that I love that it's awful. I love it so much because it's so bad, and it warms my evil heart.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Worst thing in the movie.
I'm going to say the scene in the toy store where you're supposed to be on the kid's side, but instead...
Everyone's an asshole?
Yeah, Christmas movies have this thing where they make me feel like I'm an old asshole, like, which I am,
yeah,
in general, but nothing makes me more aware of it than Christmas movies where I'm supposed to, like, feel for these kids, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, kids.
Yeah, that is, I mean, at least in kids' movies, nowadays there's more like, oh, this is, you know, written by adults, and we want adults to be able to enjoy it, but especially kids' Christmas movies from, like,
the 80s.
The 80s, everything just seemed like it was from the perspective of a kid, so they'd be like, I've got opinions, and you're supposed to go, yeah, I identify with that kid and their opinions, instead of going, shut up, kid. You do not understand how the world works. Your opinion is dumb, and you are stupid.
I quit your job, so I should get to take this sled. And I guess just be like, yeah, if I ever quit a job at a toy store, I'd steal a sled, too.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, so that's my least favorite. Yours?
My least favorite thing in this
Monster
movie...
Piece?
Probably Monster Piece.
Why did they give that guy a song?
He's awful. Like, he cannot sing, and, I mean, at least he doesn't try.
Yeah.
Most of the song, he's just sort of, like, exclaiming things instead of singing.
He sings the song the way that if they had given Paul Lynde this role, then the song would have been sung. Yes, it's my monster piece.
Yeah, it's just, don't have a musical and then cast someone who can't sing.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bad move.
Yeah, and if you have anyone in the cast who can sing, let them. There's very few songs in this movie that, because all of them were cut, I'm really curious to see the songs that were cut. I wonder if the script exists, just so I could get the lyrics.
Yeah, because all we got were, like, the Cincinnati song twice,
yeah,
Monster Piece, and then the town all praising a kid that was like, hey, stop.
And then the rest was just, like, score chunks of the original, you know, like, performance of Babes in Toyland, like, the operatic pieces. So you do, that kind of shit's in there.
Yeah. So now we're going to give a rating of 0 to 5 apiece, gives us a rating out of 10. Jeff?
I'm going
to
give this a full-on 2.5. It's bad, boring, and stupid, but it's in a way that is spectacularly interesting.
It's worth
the watch. It's an oddity watch.
It's definitely, you're watching it going like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's an oddity watch movie. So here's the weird thing about the score for me. I'm going to give it a 2.5 if you have never seen it before. The moment you've seen it once, it drops to a 1 immediately because you're like, I'm not going to be surprised or baffled by this again.
Now, I'm going to give it a 2.5, but that's because I have seen it before, but only when I was a little kid, and I had just snippets of memories. I could remember the evil gas, like, turning into a troll thing, and I could remember that the toy soldiers came out.
Yeah.
And, like, just little snippets I could remember, and that was it.
Okay, next Christmas I get to pick the TV movie that I remember vaguely and you have no idea about.
Sure.
It's going to be the Santa Claus one where John Lithgow is an evil toy executive. Have you seen
that? Well, that sounds perfect.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Perfect. Then that's...
What's it called?
It's just called The Santa Claus Story.
Oh,
it's got
okay.
a lot of an orphan staring lovingly into McDonald's's.
So, yeah.
And then cuts to McDonald's commercials.
A 5 out of 10, assuming this is either a weird nostalgia thing or you've never seen it before, and then probably like a 2 out of 10 if you have already seen this in the last 3 years.
As an adult, if you have seen this movie as an adult, do not try again.
Don't try again, because you'll just sit there going like, yeah, no, I get it. I'm not bewildered anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just sad that this is so terrible.
It even makes sense that Drew Barrymore and Keanu Reeves are here, because they weren't really all that famous yet. This is pre-Bill and Ted and pre, you know, adult career of Drew Barrymore.
Yep. So thank you so much for listening. As I mentioned, it's going to be probably about another 4 weeks before we're back. We're taking a little hiatus for the holidays.
Yeah, for Movie Mastery, that is.
You
know, part of the problem of being content creators is we can never actually stop creating content, or we are homeless.
Indeed.
So if it makes money, we'll keep doing it.
So thank you so much for listening. If you want to support us and our ability to live and occasionally take a vacation from doing a show, you can go to Patreon and support us there. Anything helps. Patreon.com/systemmastery. And if you support us at any level, you unlock bonus content. We've got different tiers for different shows. At the $5 level, you unlock our monthly afterthought, which is
really
just
good.
Just us bantering for an hour, and it's great. But it also unlocks our Discord channel for Afterthought. You can ask us questions. It unlocks a patron-only channel in the Discord. So go to Twitter. Find us there. We're System Mastery on Twitter. Our pinned tweet is our Discord channel.
Stop on by.
Come join us. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook, Reddit, anything, and our website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com.
Yep.
Thank
Very
you.
Concise, John.
Yeah. I'm good at my job. I know what I'm doing.
I'm good at my job in the sense that I am funny and stupid, which is pretty much what
I'm
people want.
I'm good at
want.
My job in the sense that I'm all drugged up.
Well, at the moment, I am extraordinarily loopy on
Dayquil.
I know.
You're very sick.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I'm sure it's visible. I feel like I'm sweating at an incredible rate at the
moment. Oh, no, you're not. Your eye is a little pink.
It's twitchy. Yeah, I'm definitely... It's been a rough couple of days. I'm full-time dadding and also extremely sick. It's not good times.
So we're going to go so Jeff can, I don't know, crash into a bed and probably die.
I'm going to trade my NyQuil for Dayquil and try to sleep it out.
We are going to see you in...
Strike that, reverse it.
Yeah, drop it, flip it, and reverse it.
Do you like that? Let me work it.
We'll see you in 4 weeks for more Movie Mastery, but until then,
unless
you have
I'm
a
dead.
Good one.